This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 17th of January, 2023, and you are on the clock on this World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
How are you doing?
I good, thank you. So, I hope you enjoyed that little sample of that song by Jacob Miller, my cousin. My Jamaican cousin, a brother from another mother, right? But I want to play that today because Jacob Miller, my dear Jamaican family, I am not claiming Jacob Miller as a Bahamian. But what I'm saying is that Jacob Miller might as well be a Bahamian, right? Because Josiah Kinslock played with the Wailers and would have been playing in that space with Jacob Miller at the time, that might as well make him a Bahamian. So we could play that song this morning. Most importantly, good morning to the officers of the RBPF. Want you guys to stay safe. And want you guys to remember that we are your friends as well. Not just that you are friends, that we're your friends as well. And please, Mr. Officer, cool down your temper, sir. That's all we ask.
What happened?
Nothing happened.
Oh, okay.
I just say
checking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just checking. You know, it's mutual, though, it's balance, right? We understand the pressures that you under. We understand what it means to attempt to do a job without the necessary resources or the necessary training or the necessary support. We understand how difficult it is to do some of these jobs outside of a culture, collective culture, that understands the nature of what you do. You know, and can understand the problems that come with what you do. So all of that's difficult. At the same time, you know, we say that because we want officers to understand. We practice empathy. We want you to practice empathy too. Please, Mr. Officer.
I mean, the hardest thing I find is regulating your own emotions, right?
Yeah.
I think that's hard for everyone.
Yeah.
And when you get triggered, and I can imagine being a police officer, it's very easy to trigger you. Somebody, you know,
All
they have to do is say one couple words, right?
Yeah.
And how do you keep your temper, you know, and not let it spill over into a personal thing? That's the hardest thing. I mean, what kind of training do they get? I mean, I'm assuming they must get some kind of training to help
training.
Them do that.
I think it's about a question of a priori, you know, like a priori, you guys research that. It's a bit of a complex term, but it's like your framework of thinking. It's like the framework through which you see the world and move through the world, right? And it can become complex or frustrating, I think, because officers and ordinary citizens often live in different worlds.
Yeah.
Navigate the world differently, see the world differently, and sometimes those perspectives clash, especially on this idea of authority and what authority means and how we exercise authority, how we operate in our authority, what it means to have like lateral authority, right? How do people who have the same level of authority interact with each other? How do you moderate each other's behavior?
Mm-hmm.
How do you ask each other to cool it down, right? And so I like the song because in that moment, right? In that moment, an officer and Jacob Miller have the same amount of power. It's only for the officer to recognize it. Right?
Mm.
And there's a balance there. That's the space we want to get to, where we understand our authority, we understand the environment in which it operates, and we understand how authorities don't necessarily diminish other people's mm-hmm. authority. But see, that's why this housing crisis thing is a big deal, right? The problem isn't that young people cannot afford to buy their own homes. It is that young people cannot afford to live in their homes with their parents who insist on infantilizing them for the rest of their life, who insist or refuse to shift their perspective and recognize their children as adults having equal authority to them. And as time wears on, that the idea that your children will have more authority than you can manage, right?
Yeah, it's like a pull and tug, right? Because
yeah.
they're moving ahead, right? They're
yeah.
becoming grown adults, but we still see them as these young kids. I mean, I have to say, I have an 18-year-old daughter, mm-hmm. and it's the same thing, because she's living under our roof. So, you know, she has to obey our rules.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that age, they're not the most respectful
yeah.
beings. And my wife finds it hard, you know, but
and just before we start our next segment,
yeah.
as parents get older, their role in society changes. That parent-child dynamic becomes the last space of authority, of recognized mm-hmm. authority they have left. And sometimes people tend to hold on to it. This term, we don't bend to our cradle. You don't bend. If you don't, and I tell people this, if you don't bend to your cradle, you're going to fall in your grave.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody wants that. So in the same sense, right?
Yeah.
We say, please, Mr. Officer, and for all the little children out there, we say, please, Mr. Mummy Daddy, Mrs. Mummy, Mr. Daddy, cool down your temper, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Don't beat these
control.
Children. Yeah.
They just, you know, as a parent, you have this control mechanism, right?
Yeah.
But when they grow up, you can't, you know, once
control
they're
18, them in the same way.
No, you yeah. can't. You have to try a different approach.
All right, listen, we gotta get into this segment. Exciting conversation this morning. We have representatives from the Department of Inland Revenue joining us today to talk about what's going on in the department. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Please introduce yourself to the listening audience.
Well, I am Dexter Fernando. I'm the operation manager here at the Department of Inland Revenue.
Thank you. Are you the only person joining us in the Zoom room this morning?
There are some other members of our communication team that are here with us.
Okay.
But mainly I'll speak for today as we lead to about the biggest period of our business, Inland Revenue section, and that's being the business license renewal period.
Absolutely. Great. It's halfway through January. It's a great time to have that conversation. Tell us what we need to know for 2023.
So we've changed a little bit as it relates to the requirements. It's an online process. Individuals will log in. There's no need to come down to the department. So with your wonderful smartphone that's made some of us dumb, you can submit your turnover, your supporting documents, and then submit a case and we'll review it. And then you would have a business license for the year 2023. So we want individuals to know, first of all, that it needs to be filed on or before January 31st. After that, you will incur a late filing penalty. And then after March 31st, you get a late payment penalty. And we also introduced a 5% compound interest penalty that will come in on April 1st. So what we're saying is file your return and then pay. One thing we've added in this year is that all places that have a commercial location, wherever your business is located, you need to also submit clear directions to where your place is. Your business could be on Queens Highway or East Street South. Where specifically on East Street South? And then include also the assessment number for the building that you're operating from.
Okay. For most businesses, aren't they required to have a inspection to determine whether they can operate a business in that place?
Well, let's just say there is an inspection. The there are different acts. And so the physical planning act, that the town planning, there's no need, or the act currently hasn't been amended to say that in your inspection, you are required to submit to the Department of Ministry of Works the assessment number.
Okay.
What it says now is that that you need to identify where the place is located. What we're finding is that individuals are not on our tax book. So there are individuals who are, yes, they're operating from place, but they have never, after gotten their conveyance, their building occupancy, they've never come down to the department to register the property. The second thing is, we don't see business licenses where the individual for a commercial location have identified where the rent and the accommodations that they're receiving from the commercial is being filed to the department. So we're making this a level playing field. We're starting off from scratch. So this year we are requiring the assessment numbers. As you would see in the physical planning, the consolidated agency application now, your assessment number is now required as you submit for the process. So we are just in the process of stepping back, making sure everyone is compliant. That's what I want to find, and moving forward with the business license application.
Okay, so let's...
I have a question, Mr. Fernandez. So say you're running a business, right? But you haven't yet registered your business. Is there, and you just, you know, because nobody's really chasing you, et cetera, is there like a penalty for non-registering? And how would you know if there's somebody running a business that hasn't registered yet? You know, it could be like a mama, you know, somebody just running a bakery out of their home, that kind of thing.
Yes, so the Business License Act and Value Added Tax Act gives us administrative penalties that can reach range from $750 a day to $1,500 if you're fined with operating a business, which we will call, for lack of a word, illegal business without the relevant information or relevant approvals. The next portion of that is that you will also be assessed, and the act allows us to go back 10 years.
Wow.
So, for example, let's say that you're in a commercial place and you haven't been forward with bringing the information. That's fine. We'll go back and assess you from the date of your occupancy certificate when you became a commercial location. And so it's best that you come into us voluntary than for us to then raise this assessment on you. So right now we're asking people to come in. Let's be honest with our turnovers. My pet peeve is, of certain industries where you can sit down and do an automatic calculation. For the ladies who, let's say nails cost $55, manicure is $55. Mm. You times that by work 8 hours a day. No, let's say you work 7 hours a day, seven customers, 1 an hour. Mm. You are at a minimum of making $385, if my calculation is right. And if you're only working 5 days a week, you already reach $1,900 for that week. You should at least for 52 weeks be a VAT registrant. Let's knock off 2 weeks you take for vacation. So we are now getting to the point where we're sitting down and looking at the information. And we're asking individuals to be truthful. If you're advertising out there a certain price, we can, you know, do some guesstimation. But we would prefer not to go to that point, raising assessments. And so we're now asking people to be honest as best as possible. And, you know, BIM is a very honest people. So we're asking for individuals to submit their turnover before they take out any deductions, not their net profit, but their total revenue collected.
Right. That's what I was about to ask. This figure of $100,000 per year is gross, not net.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Gross.
Right. So it's what you take in.
So let's go to the area. I know I'm getting troubled with this. Let's go to the area.
But listen,
we know that in some industry there is a certain people who brag about paying a daily ASU. So at a minimum, if you are doing an ASU that throws a hand of $500, you are working hard to at least make $500 a day. What are we saying about the turnover when you submit something saying that you only made $500 for the year?
I got you.
You understand?
That's obvious on the face of it that the numbers don't match up.
And then you have two individuals employed. So you're either lying at National Insurance or you're lying to us. How is it, you know, how are you able to sustain employees with that at that rate.
Right, and to engage in that type of
activity. We're asking individuals.
Ms. Fernanda, how do the agencies work together? Because I would imagine that would be a good way of, you know, cross-referencing, you know, exactly what you just talked about. You know, is there any communication between National Insurance, or would this be in an investigation? Would this be triggered by an investigation, or is there any, you know, are you collaborating
with
them?
Most of this is triggered by investigation or industry studies.
Yeah.
We would go after industries. Let's be honest, during the pandemic, the best thing that sold was liquor. Everyone for their lockdown is so the liquor. So we try to look at the industries, look at industry trends. We're working with memorandums of understanding so that we can share the type of information, making sure, you know, legally we can do that type of cross-referencing. But, you know, you could do your own statistical analysis within your department. There is a saying, there is a line on the business license that asks you your number of employees. So we can guesstimate from there, make sound estimates of what you would look like as an average turnover of your revenue. And that's what we raise the assessments on if they are not willing to come forward with the information.
All right. I see in a recent article, Inland Revenue to Increase Scrutiny of Business Turnover, in the Nassau Guardian, that the department is targeting $146 million in business license fees for this fiscal year. And I am excited about helping you all collect that. First of all, I want to ask about private collection agencies, second of all, I want to ask about private collection agencies. First of all, I want to ask what type of businesses need a business? Because I've been running this Chikchani business for about 2 years now, and nobody told me that I needed a business license to sell Chikchanis.
So Chikchani needs to come in and get that business license. The Act says if there is any exchange of worth for the transaction, so you who doing the breeding, or there is some type of exchange of funds for that service, good or service, you need a business license for activities that happen within the jurisdiction. So one thing that also happened this year is we had previously export services. Mm-hmm. The activity happens in the Bahamas, but it's enjoyed outside of the Bahamas.
Yeah.
That now, that export item, export of conch, export of et cetera, whatever that export item, that is now a part of your revenue submitted to the department. So back to your question, every taxable service needs a business license. So the Act states now, let's be clear, even if you're a nonprofit organization, let's say you're selling mops, the Act waivers you from certain fees, but you should have a business license. So you're exempted as a religious or a charitable organization from the fees.
Right.
That can change.
But you must get the license.
Mm-hmm. You must have a license. So a school is exempted from business license fees. But it says that you should file. It could be a decision of any government at any point to say, hey, I need to now include you into the tax base. And so everyone who has, there is an exchange of revenue, the exchange of funds, should have a business license.
And if I'm an NGO, do I need to be registered under the new NPO Act as
a part?
That's
correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So you should have your articles, a memorandum of nonprofit registration from the Registrar General. Then you come down to us so that, especially if you're getting a significant grant from the Bahamas government, you know we now have the tax compliance certificate that says that even though as an NGO, your staff is, your national insurance contributions are happening, we're getting there bit by bit, communicating with each other. At the end of this month, we are also partnering with the National Insurance Board. So if individuals know that they are delinquent or need to make some payment or registration with the Department, the National Insurance Board, they will be here at the department from the 24th through the 26th in person. So it will be a one-stop shop. You can come and make that payment. Even though they are online portals, there's some individuals, a small portion, who still want to come in, who still wants to stand on the line and get a receipt in their hand. Mm-hmm. So we're going to accommodate those individuals at the end of the month.
I like what you say about a one-stop shop. I used to be a businessman back in the day, and it's a lot of work, you know, a lot of paperwork. You know, you've got VAT, you've got all kinds of business license, accounts, and you know, it's a lot of work. You know, it's hard enough making a living, you know, being a businessman and taking those risks, and then, you know, what are you guys doing to minimize that whole, you know, that back end work that a businessman needs to do,
right? Yes. And so,
consolidating it, because it's you know, and to say, you know, most of us haven't really got that maths training, and it's like you don't want to touch it, right? Because it's too complicated. Let me deal with the customers instead.
Would it be reasonable for me to suggest to Bahamians that starting businesses to assist people in ensuring that they are in compliance with the business license and all of the other tax requirements, is this a good idea, and is it needed in general?
It's a good idea. We are always encouraging growth, and maybe that's a good area for this special development area. But what we have tried to do is that any seventh grader can go onto our webpage and follow the steps. We've placed everything on there. We've gone from step one straight to step five. After you finish step one, we've created helpful YouTube links and tutorials on how to file, how to do these stuff. Everyone is now electronic. So we have a one-stop shop, a consolidated agency application. No longer do you have to go to physical planning, environmental health, Ministry of Works for building control, the police for the fire, and the liquor license. All you can go to the one web page, submit and follow the steps, complete all the steps, and you can have your license within 7 working days.
This is so great. What is the web page?
We're moving, but there's still that populace who wants to say, hey, let me stand on the line. And we understand that it's over time and things will change. So we still try to accommodate both as much as we can.
Absolutely. And what is the website? How do I get there?
So the website is inlandrevenue.finance.gov. That's for government, gov.bs. That's inlandrevenue.finance.gov.bs. And we also have a help desk that's open. And the hotline number from the Famy Allen and New Providence is 225-7280.
225-7280.
Zero.
You know, I agree with you. The online access is great. And be patient with the newer users. It takes them practice to develop the comfort level with the new technology.
See, what I've noticed, with the property, I know the business side is a little bit more complex, but be straightforward. And what I've noticed now, you get the emails. You get you get an email every year in good time with the charges and then the payment plan, and so there's no excuse, right?
Yeah.
You know, like BPL, they send you that. So that I think that's really improved, and it's down to me if I don't pay.
Right.
So you have made it easier for sure.
Absolutely, and go on.
We've made it easier. Unfortunately, we went through a point of an amnesty period to see if we could get people to come in. They didn't come in. After the amnesty period, we've made demand notices on banks. Some individuals have still left the jurisdiction. And so now we've actually placed them in third party. So before we get to the point of going to the third party, we wanted individuals to come in. Because once it goes to the third party private collector, there's now 40% added to your bill.
40%? So,
wow.
40%, that's that's added to your bill. So we're encouraging people, and there's like 1 year. These are institutional, historical information where they have significant arrears.
Right.
And so we've actually, maybe this year, encouraged the use of garnishing, where we can have the rent of your tenant redirected to us to pay your outstanding taxes.
Pause right there.
We have these instruments, but we don't want to enforce them. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to encourage landlords to first make sure that their arrears are addressed.
Absolutely. So that is interesting. Mm. This is the Real Property Tax Act empowers the Department of Inland Revenue to retrieve taxes. Through garnishing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that you can request that the tenant who is actively paying rent to the landlord directly to the Department of Inland Revenue.
That's correct.
That's one method. The second method, if I'm correct, is that banks that are holding mortgages
or assets,
or
as a guarantee for a loan,
okay, will be directed to divert the funds to the Department of Inland Revenue.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Are there any other methods or measures that the department has available to them through various pieces of legislation to, quote unquote, retrieve the money?
I think the question you're asking, can they sell?
The final document we would use is that of sale of property.
Gotcha.
But that's like I said, we are trying to stimulate growth within the economy.
Mm-hmm.
We want to use that as the last instrument, last option, if possible. But if at some point where the outstanding amount is almost to the value of the property, then sale is inevitable that we have to go ahead and sale.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. This is fascinating.
So I have a big question. I heard figures of $1 billion of arrears. Is that correct? Because that seems that's a percentage of our GDP, right?
That's correct.
Wow.
So we are trying to look at this mountain, see how best we can handle this mountain.
I didn't know you could owe $1,000 million in this little country of ours. That's incredible.
Mr. Palmer,
let's just look at it. At some point, we developed more teeth to the act.
Okay.
So at some point when an investor came in, we were so happy to have the investment, we didn't make sure that bond was issued for certain taxes.
Mm.
As we grew, as the country grew over these 50 years, we improved the instrument, that being the regulator's documents.
Mm-hmm.
The jurisdiction, it almost be like us looking forward or running after someone who has vanished into air.
Yep.
So there is this need, and of course, beams are very creative. Today we might be Chikchani, tomorrow I could be Chick, and then tomorrow I could be Chick Limited, which legally is a different structure. And so we have to connect the dots and get the funds collected properly.
Absolutely. Wow, I'm still
reeling from that figure, because $1 billion,
how long do you think that's been amassing, the $1 billion in arrears?
I can't speak to it right now if I have the information in front of me, but
if you had a list,
are
it would
addressing
be very long.
Outstanding, and as you can see, we are addressing the outstanding arrears. So we have beefed up the compliance as it relates to that, so that we can address that that mountain. We are appreciative of the international and local advisors that have assisted with us in terms of what we now have of the roadmap. On addressing those arrears. So the first thing was the demand notices. So anything that's under our portfolio of a lending institute, that's not just the commercial banks.
Yes.
Everyone is going to a credit union, et cetera, and there's an auto, the insurance companies, I understand insurance companies are now giving loans, et cetera. Anything that is under their portfolio, we're asking them to come in, check on that document, because you are responsible for the property. Whilst there is a letter of satisfaction that's not being issued. So even after you've paid your loan, and if the bank still owns your property, that bank is now still responsible for your debt, or to ensure that you cover your outstanding taxes.
Do you have a figure for how many businesses there are and how many properties there are in the Bahamas? I think that would be interesting. I mean, are we talking about businesses? 20,000.
So I can give you a snapshot of last year. Last year, 48,000 businesses registered as new businesses last year.
What?
Just new businesses. 48,000 people came in. Out of that 48,000, only 10,000 of them registered for business for value added tax. So that's almost 38,000 businesses who are telling us that they're under the $100,000 threshold, and we need to work on them. And so from those numbers, you see the amount of compliance that we have to do as it relates to those matters and address those matters.
Yeah. How many people would you need in your department to? I mean, it's the same in every country. You cannot have 1 million people inspecting. You know, you have to do it on kind of a lottery, or you know, you If they don't write, you pick them at random, I guess, or if there's flags. I mean, what? How many people do you think you would need for this to run efficiently and make a dent?
We would need an IRS. Right now, we have a complement of maybe 200, where we are doing more of risk analysis in terms of looking at the peak industries and going in that area where we see there is compliance. One thing with VAT, it tells us over time those that compliant, that become compliant, less compliant areas. And so we're using that type of strategy, lessons learned from other countries within the region. And so we're getting the correct complement of staff necessary. So we're looking at some point becoming the Bahamas IRS.
And I imagine
the staff that we would need for that.
And I imagine that the services that you offer and the tax, portfolio and as well, right? Because we're looking
at a
credit bureau and a credit rating agency in the near future.
That's correct.
Absolutely.
It sounds like it would be self-funding, you know, because if you can generate that additional revenue that's being lost, then that would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. That is a great candidate for that type of mechanism. I'm not sure if you could discuss that type of issue on air, sir, but that would be a great model for government agencies, right? It also helps to create a different type of working culture where people are motivated to generate the revenue that supports their technical existence.
Well, I encourage Reid. There was a document that was launched about tax reform, and such conversations were talked about inside that white paper. I think it was tabled in maybe 2014. So there are documents that talk about or speak about that move to an authority, an agency, a quasi-government, that type of institutional, and the transformation of these leakages in revenue. So that's our starting point, is at least we have that white paper that has some teeth to it. For where we want to go.
Do you have staff that are available to engage civic organizations and businesses that want to have presentations on tax reform, the tax reforms and the overview mentioned in that what would be that 2014 paper, and then simple sort of how-to tips for everyday spenders and business owners?
Certainly. That's correct. They can contact revenue or the revenue section of the Ministry of Finance that has the carriage as it relates to tax implications and enforcement. So they can call the department, and we are willing to talk to the NGOs, the organizations, the special groups, the cosmetologists, about every grouping, the importance of the role that we play in terms of getting the ultimate goals within an economy done. You know, I always say we are very Nassau-centric. Until you drop in a hole in Andres, you would see that the revenue that we're collecting helps to get those things that we need within all of the Fami Islands that we enjoy here. I know you've never been in Exuma and realized in the middle of the day that there's no electricity in the middle of the day, or your electricity is off. We want it to be, as that island is growing, that we are able to support that infrastructure that's necessary there.
Absolutely. Mr. Fernando, I've got a call, and then I got a couple of texts for you. Let's go to the call. Good morning, caller. Good morning. How are you?
Yes. Are there any payment plans? Because I don't hear them saying anything about payment plans. Persons coming in and making payment plans. What is with that?
Absolutely.
Okay. So first thing, as it relates to payment plans, they can come in and talk to us. Once it is under a lending institution, you have to be redirected back to that bank or financial institution that gave you that instrument. Your discussions are with them. Like I said, we've gone through four years of encouraging people to pay their taxes. We gave an amnesty period, and which we gave 50% off. 50% off and waived your surcharges. And we gave a period of 3 years. Individuals did not take that on. And so we've reached the point of the demand notices. So if you have property that is not under a mortgage, a portfolio of a lending institution, mm-hmm. we're still willing to discuss it with you. You can call our department and we can have someone come in and we can talk about a payment plan as relates to the outstanding taxes.
All right. And
if shut no company down. We want mm-hmm. the company to grow. We need them to grow so we can have employment. Mm-hmm. We want to address the regular situations. But at the same time, we need you to be cognizant of your taxes and pay them.
You
have to remember that your VAT that you receive, once you net it off every month or every quarter, make sure you lend that, send the funds that is necessary for the government back to the government. Do not use that funds as part of your cash flow.
Right. So what is earmarked for taxes, for VAT, or VAT collection, or for taxes, you need to put that aside and ensure that you send it to the relevant agencies when necessary. Mm-hmm. And
we have a wonderful social media, Facebook and IG, all those places that you can get information. We have helpful tubes up there, what you need to do. We're just encouraging individuals to come in before January 31st, on or before January 31st, pay before March 31st, and you don't want that interest penalty on April 1st.
So and the interest penalty is 5% starting on April
5%.
1st.
So late payment is 10%, interest is 5%, and then late filing is $100.
Okay, what in terms of, like, say, property tax related matters, right? What if the property, the ownership of the property has been in sort of in dispute, right? Say for six mm-hmm. or 7 years, mm-hmm. and it turns out that the person who actually has title was being frustrated in holding that title. Is there some grace or leeway for people who are in those types of situations?
Well, in those special situations, we got the instructions of the court. So as it relates now, we remain on what appears on the registered conveyance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that goes with stick a pause there. That means a lot of people have conveyance that have never mm-hmm. been registered.
Okay.
And so we go by what is there and the registered conveyance. And then once administrative court decision has been, then we can settle whatever matter there is.
Mm-hmm.
But we hold solid to what there is on the registered conveyances and those matters until the dispute as a decision. That could even be a divorce settlement.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in still in progress, we go by what's on the conveyance. And then after this, the divorce court, Supreme Court decision, we can follow those documents.
Absolutely. The text here says, hi, good morning. How can tenants be expected to pay rent without any contract or arrangement with Inland Revenue? And so I guess...
Well, so the thing is, you look at the amendment to the Act. The Act now has that ability for us as a part of the garnishing.
Okay.
So you are in a building,
mm-hmm.
and we're not going to release the information of your information to your tenant. But we first start off by saying, could you ask your landlord to give us a contact? If your landlord refuses to come in and make an arrangement with us, we then execute that power, which is under the Act, and we redirect that rent to the outstanding taxes. And I think it is in Section 6 of both of the Real Property Tax and the Business License Act that has been amended so that we can get those type of garnishing. So the question is, are you comfortable as a tenant operating in a business in a location that has outstanding? Let's look at it. If you were not paying your bills,
mm-hmm. sir, you had a music.
If you weren't paying your light or
yeah.
your water, they cut you off, your phone off. And so we're just going to cut you off in a bit.
Just
a smooth way.
We got to go to a break. When we get back to the break, and my heart and my wallet just broke just now. When we get back to the break, I think I will have mended them back, and we will continue with the texts. And with this conversation, I thank you so much for joining us. Please stay tuned. You're on the clock with Aaron Green, Mr. Mark Palmer. We're talking to the Department of Inland Revenue about the changes in the business license process. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 19. 19-
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
I, Mr. Fernanda, and staff from the Department of Inland Revenue are joining us this morning for a very important conversation. If you own a business, if you intend on owning a business, if you own property, if you rent property, if you're unsure of what you want to do with your property, you have to tune into this conversation. It's been fascinating so far. And I've got a ton of texts here, and I just want to jump straight into the text, Mr. Palmer, Mr. Fernanda. Oh, I'm sorry, audience members, you're on the clock, and we're having a most important discussion about taxation in the New Bahamas. I got a text here that says, my property is valued under $300,000, and real property tax is sending me a bill. Why? That's the question from the text. So the question from me is, what is the minimum threshold for real property tax? Like, what's the lowest property value that attracts a taxation?
So I think it's $5,000, and that's just maybe a vacant lot owned by a foreigner on a family island or something like that. So to answer the question, if it's under $300,000, it does not mean that you automatically exempt. The exemption is for owner-occupied. So if the property is under $300,000 and we have proof that you're owner-occupied and you reside there, yes, there is no taxes. But we have information when we go to properties. When we go to properties, the tenant tells us, oh, chief, boss man don't live here. So the exemption has been taken away. So, unfortunately, we are receiving false affirmations by individuals. Mm-hmm. They voted in a different constituency in the election, but yet they're still saying that they want owner-occupied for a place that doesn't match.
I understand.
And so we are connecting the dots. You cannot do a national insurance verification showing that you live X, mm-hmm. and then you want exemption for owner-occupied at Y. So the first thing is, if we make mistakes, we agree we do make mistakes, come in, do an affirmation form, and then we can ascertain exactly why you're getting you're not getting the exemption.
Absolutely. And
so the first thing we look at is we have an assessor who might have been out to your property, and we receive information from your tenant, or we have information from extra sources, maybe water and sewage, where you signed on a document to allow your tenant to sign to get the electricity on or the water on.
Absolutely.
So first of all, we want people to be honest. Mm-hmm. You cannot be owner-occupied at three locations. Well, hey, if you are wealthy like that, you might have three locations, but only one of them can get the exemption.
Absolutely. A Texas asked a question. They said, listen, here's the context. Landlord is occupying the same building as the tenant. They're both operating some sort of business, or they have some sort of occupancy. The Department of Inland Revenue the Department of Inland Revenue can identify the owner of the property. The property owner is in arrears on real property tax. Will the department garnish the rental payments of the tenant, even if they can identify the landlord and the landlord buying the building?
So the answer is yes. We will still garnish, because if there's an outstanding arrears, we have the ability to garnish.
Absolutely. Is there any contractual agreement between the tenant and the landlord that would somehow supersede the provisions in law in the Real Property Tax Act and the Business License Act?
Well, we haven't seen any challenge, because once you first come into our department, when you receive your business license, we asked you for your lease agreement.
Okay.
At some point, we asked you for your lease agreement. When you went down to physical planning, you're supposed to present your lease agreement.
Okay.
So that at that time tells us what you were paying. Of course, you know, inflation, some people have changed their lease agreements or their status. So we haven't been challenged as yet. But so we know what you were paying at the time when you first came into the system because you were supposed to reduce your lease agreement. To
got you. I understand now. I understand now. I'm not saying that I run a business. I'm just saying that I have to have
let me be honest. Let's look at the flip side of it. Mm-hmm. Some individuals are now coming into us and telling us, listen, I rented my place for this person to live in. I didn't know she opened up beauty parlor.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not want her in my place doing that. I don't want my septic tank filled up with perm and I have to pump every 2 months. And so we're to the point where we're realizing landlords don't know what's going on their premises. They never gave the permission.
Ah, I understand. I understand. Okay. Thank you very, very much. We're all out of time. I got a caller. Let's go to the caller very quickly. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning to the representatives for the Inland Revenue Service. Two very quick questions here. Firstly, for properties, persons not occupying the properties, just for clarity, is there taxes being imposed that's not being occupied as yet or just being developed? One. And my second question is, from the best of your knowledge, do you know if there is any provision in law that's coming up where there's annual tax returns for all these taxes that people are paying into Inland Revenue Service? Thank you for taking my call, Aaron.
Thank you very much.
Okay, didn't hear him very clear. So let me try to answer the first question. Mm-hmm. Basically asked if the property is undeveloped, is there a tax? Well, the Real Property Tax Act was amended a year or 2 years ago that says something about improvement. Previously, we used to wait until the occupancy certificate. So it's Real Property Tax says that improvement is anything that is affixed to the soil. So if you change it from virgin soil and have now placed a structure on it, that structure is called an improvement and has a value and can be assessed with banks. When you get your first phase of your release of your payment in a loan, or let's just be honest, that structure, if it, God forbids, a hurricane comes back, what would you need to do to rebuild that you had on your property?
Mm-hmm.
And so it is assessed that value has that structure has a value. So even a derelict building or a building that's not complete has a value. It might not have the same grade as an A, but it has a value. And so the act changed. We used to wait until the occupancy certificate, but we've realized individuals have moved in with partial occupancy certificate, half electricity or whatever they want to call it,
mm-hmm.
and never come into the building, come into the department. And so we are now going after those type of structures. So as you get phase one and phase two of your release of funds from the bank, we then have a value for that which is on. We'll look at other things because, you know, Bahamians, we try to do things out of our pocket before we go to the bank for the last lending part of it.
Yes,
so that structure is we raise an assessment on the value of what we think it is to build that.
Absolutely.
So I hope that answers the first question.
Thank you, Mr. Fernando. We are all out of time. Listen, this is great because it means that I have to beg you to make, if not on the clock, the Guardian 96.9 radio the home of all tax information, right? Let's make this the space where we teach Bahamians about the new Bahamas that we are going to be navigating. This is a fascinating conversation. I've got callers, I've got texts, but I'm so sorry to everyone. We're out of time. And so please visit inlandrevenue.finance.gov.bs for more questions and answers to your questions. And you can call 225-7280. That's 225-7280 for more information or to speak to someone. And I'm going to repeat this information over the next few days until I can convince you gentlemen and the department to come back on again. Let's continue this conversation so I could be in compliance with my Chikchani empire.
Have a wonderful day.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Fernando. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Thank you to the callers and the listeners. the texters. Have a great day, Bahamas. Team Color Red.